a lot of the stuff Project 2025 wants to do, the powers will be invested in the presidency and into the executive branch. There will be very little recourse. Even if Trump doesn't win, this is still in writing. I mean, this is the plan. This is the far right, the extreme far right, the Christian nationalist plan. I don't want people to be afraid. I want them to work. I want them to be informed. Do not put your head in the sand. Once you get to a certain point, there's no going back.
Welcome to episode 179 of the Refuse Fascism podcast, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of the show. Refuse Fascism exposes, analyzes, and stands against the very real danger and threat of fascism coming to power in the United States. Today, we're talking about Project 2025 and sharing an interview with Wendy Bai, co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Thanks to everyone who goes the extra step and rates and reviews the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you appreciate the show and want to help us reach more people who want to refuse fascism, be like a rock star. Go write a review and drop 5 stars wherever you listen to your pods. Go tell the strangers out there in podcast land why you listen, and they should too. Subscribe, follow, so you never miss an episode. And of course, keep up all that great commenting and sharing on social media and the YouTubes. Thanks to everyone over at Patreon for supporting the show for $2 or more a month. Thanks, patrons. As a special thank you and opportunity to be part of the Refuse Fascism community live together, Wednesday, November 29th at 8 p.m., Coco Das, Paul Street, and I are going to be holding a patron-only Ask Us Anything Within Limits Zoom chat. Patrons, there's a post with a sign-up link, so make sure to RSVP. It's not too late to join. Sign up to give $5 a month or more, and you'll get an invite. Become a patron over at patreon.com/refusefascism. Before we get to the interview, a few developments from this week that I just want to highlight. I want to first shout out Stephen Colbert for his monologue on Tuesday, November 14th, where he said regarding Trump, quote, "As much as all of us talk and think about this numbnut, every so often it's really important to, let's say metaphorically, jam the sharpened stick of knowledge into the soft inner thigh of your mind and just grind it around a little bit to try to reawaken the horror of what our country would be like if this hate-filled dingus and his soulless goons ever got a hold of power again. Because, and I don't know if you've noticed, but Donald Trump is a fascist," end quote. Colbert then goes on to dispense corroboration for his analysis, including Trump's calling of his opponents vermin. He then says, quote, "Trump has long toyed with the language of fascism, but is now openly cribbing from Hitler and Mussolini. In response to such comparisons, Trump's team released a statement. Quote, those who try to make that ridiculous assertion are clearly snowflakes grasping for anything, and their entire existence will be crushed when President Trump returns to the White House," end quote. Colbert then quips, quote, "Furthermore, anyone who says I'm a cannibal is a liar, and if they say it again, I will eat their delicious face," end quote. Several states have filed lawsuits seeking to bar Trump from the state's Republican primary ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which disqualifies people from running for office if they've engaged in quote-unquote insurrection or rebellion against the United States. In the latest installment of The Courts Will Not Save Us from the Fascist Threat, Colorado State District Court Judge Sarah B. Wallace held this week that, yes, Trump, quote, engaged in insurrection on January 6, 2021 through incitement, and that the First Amendment does not protect his speech, end quote, and that he, quote, acted with the specific intent to disrupt the Electoral College certification of President Biden's electoral victory through unlawful means, end quote. And also, yes, yes to Trump staying on the primary ballot in the state because the court holds that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does not apply to Trump because it's unclear whether barring insurrectionists from public office applies to the presidency. You can't make this shit up. Yes, the case is being appealed. Whether an appeal from Colorado or from another state let's remember where this is going to end up. The Trump-stacked fascist majority Supreme Court. Chris Lehman for The Nation made this really essential identification regarding Trump and the MAGA movement. Quote, "The movement's maximum leader no longer bothers to conceal or downplay his determination to throttle the last vestiges of formal democratic conduct in American public life," end quote. There are now, as Lehman writes, quote, "serial reports on how Trump intends to remake the federal workforce in his strongman image, deploy the federal justice system to revenge on political enemies, and invoke the Insurrection Act to criminalize dissent and adopt new and far more draconian versions of his first-term immigration bans," end quote. Ever since their exit from the White House, the fascists have been crafting their plans for once they re-seize power. Schedule F, Agenda 47, Trump's own fascist policy bucket list, and today's topic, Project 2025, which is championed by, facilitated by, the Heritage Foundation, to be ready day one with a full roster of MAGA loyalists to replace all those the regime will purge. Project 2025 calls for dismantling the federal civil service system, filling the federal government with those who are beholden only to the fascism, unbound by the rule of law, and purging any who are unwilling to carry out illegal orders, massive deportation and detention camps, and enacting again a Muslim ban, weaponizing the justice system, pardoning those who participated in the coup attempt, and locking up any who try to resist. Here we are, November 19th, 2023, and Trump continues to be the front runner by a long shot to be the GOP nominee in 2024. His goals and the entire Republic Fascist Party that backs him have a clear, public, and consistent mission to unleash the full power of the state to exact revenge on all who are perceived to have wronged them and all they hate. This time around, ardent loyalists only. Not those who care about any of those pesky norms, constitution, or rule of law, including being supported, protected, advanced by a legion of pitbull MAGA lawyers like Mike Dash, who recently gloated, quote, "We're gonna deport a lot of people, 10 million people and growing, anchor babies, their parents, their grandparents," going on to say, "We're gonna put kids in cages. It's gonna be glorious. We're gonna detain a lot of people in the DC gulag and Gitmo," end quote. Mike Dash, who's also talked about indicting Biden and every other Biden and helping to pardon January 6th insurrectionists. As Paul Street wrote this week, quote, "The path forward looks shockingly strong for the orange-tinted Americana retribution candidate Felonious Don. And this time, he has a vast neo-fascist policy network in place to implement a Christian white nationalist agenda like folks have never seen in this country, to be protected by a federal judiciary he has stopped with cold-blooded revanchists," end quote. It's worth noting, at long last, how post-Trump's Furman speech, more people, including those in the media, are using the F word, fascism, and making the comparison, many more so than did 8 years ago. I also need to note that there's a serious danger here in that those same people are deluding themselves and you into thinking that the most meaningful, the best and only action, our only recourse, is to vote. Essay after essay with powerful exposure on the very real threat and danger, immediately followed by the incessant and erroneous claim that there's only one way to stop him. Him being Trump, on election day. Trumpism is leading the way, setting the terms on the national political stage and throughout society at large. Fascists are on the march, and all of them, whether they personally like Trump or not, are marching behind him and what he made possible. The tearing up of norms, clearing the war path, stoking his base to be even more white supremacist, misogynistic, patriarchal, and murderously and genocidally lunatic. When faced with a fascist menace who led a coup, is backed up and defended by a fascist GOP, prepared to seize power by hook or by crook, including violence, already declaring any loss illegitimate, and a bloodthirsty, armed to the teeth base, do you seriously think relying on elections is a winning strategy? Given that the last few years has not abated the threat, but merely postponed it. If we were right, which we were, about the analysis that what we're facing is fascism, just, I don't know, perhaps we continue to be right about what's needed. The Democrats are bound to the terms established by the system, a system which birthed this fascism, and more, they are locked in on the terms the fascists set. They continue and are increasingly dogged in their attempt to find a resolution from the very norms and institutions these fascists don't give a shit about, are defying, tearing up, or have remade as fascist instruments. Case in point, see the courts. And I gotta wonder, y'all, will we continue to allow our outrage and hopes to be diverted into the very channels that are being eviscerated and away from the kind of deep mass society-wide struggle that is needed? Coco Das came on the show last spring, I believe May. She had recently written about the Democratic strategy, and this quote from her remains really true to me, and I think it's really important for us to think about and continue to discuss and get to work on. She wrote and said, quote, "An opposition party relying on Trump and all the terrible things he has unleashed to help them win the next election will continue to stop you from doing what humanity needs. They will keep you off the streets. They will urge you to use your vote as your voice. They will tell you to swallow your rage until the next election. They will kill your moral determination to resist with every fiber of your being. They will keep you in a web of ignorance and passivity. The roads of fascism is paved with fake opposition and honeyed words. The only force that can be a real match for Trump and Trumpism is us, the people in our millions, sounding the alarm on the danger we face, calling out dead-end strategies like relying on the Democrats to stop this threat, and building a nonviolent mass movement of real resistance, refusing to accept these terms and flooding the public square and public discourse with our moral conviction, no matter what the Democrats tell us." With that, here's my interview with Wendy. The Republican fascists are fighting for a permanent win, one that eliminates for good all of their political enemies and all of the people who they think have destroyed, quote unquote, their country. This comprehensive blueprint for fascist consolidation is outlined in Project 2025, which, as I mentioned before, has barely been covered by the media. Despite the five alarm fire it represents, blatant dictatorship in which the unchallenged domination of these fascists will be enforced at every level and by every means at their disposal. To get into what Project 2025 is, who's behind it, its implications, and more, I am so glad to welcome Wendy Vai. Wendy is the Chief Strategy Officer and co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Their mission is strengthening a diverse global community committed to exposing and countering racism, bigotry, and hatred. They have authored an extensive report analyzing Project 2025, the Far Right Playbook for American Authoritarianism. Welcome, Wendy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I guess let's start with the big, what is Project 2025 in broad strokes?
In broad strokes, they've been putting out plans for years for conservatives and the conservatives in politics, the leadership. This is their latest iteration of that, how you described it in your opening. It's very deep into sort of our government and society, and it's endorsed right now more than 80 other pretty powerful organizations. And I know that they are planning to grow that endorsement.
What do we need to know in terms of who is behind this effort? You've mentioned the Heritage Foundation and that they've been coming up with plans or visions for their ideal world for some time. What makes this different for them than, you know, previous attempts, so that it's not something that we can just dismiss, but it's something that we have to take seriously?
Yeah, I think the difference is obviously the possibility of a Trump re-election. When we do our work, when we talk about extremism, we don't pretend that it's something new. It's not. Hate and extremism has been around, you know, as long as people have been around. But what happened when Trump became president was sort of the normalizing of these very radical ideas, the normalizing of bigotry, all of these things that any politician who wanted to be elected would not say. You know, no matter what party you were from, there were certain lines you just simply didn't cross. And being racist was one of them. In this new plan, saying that you're going to take away the independence of the Justice Department. These are things that you just would not say, but now they are completely acceptable. So what's different this time is that there is a chance these things can be implemented, and they can be implemented to a degree that these organizations might never have dreamed could happen. And now there's a real opportunity. So they are sort of doubling down on what it should look like. And one thing that's interesting is that in recent days, you know, I'd like to think that we've brought attention to this Project 2025 and that others are doing so now because it hasn't received nearly enough attention. But in recent days, the Trump campaign has tried to distance itself from some of these plans, which is laughable because they are so in bed with so many of them, so many of the organizations and the authors, and they used to be in his former administration, you know, on and on and on. It's a completely incestuous situation. And they're trying to distance themselves from it only because it's, you know, in my opinion, it's true.
I was reading, as I'm sure you were, more about what this is and who's behind it. And there was a report put out this week by Jim Vanderhill and Mike Allen for Axios that I found to be a really helpful breakdown. One of the things that it was saying in summary was that hundreds of people are spending tens of millions of dollars to install a pre-vetted pro-Trump army of up to 54,000 loyalists across government to rip off the restraints imposed on the previous 46 presidents. And I thought that that was a helpful drill down look at what this is going for. In this article, they had also talked about that this quote unquote government in waiting is, as you had talked about, the brainchild of the Heritage Foundation. It's incredibly well-funded, Project 2025, which has already, please correct me if I'm wrong, come up with a policy book that's over 900 pages long.
That is
right. So this is like a big deal. 400 plus contributors. It includes their president, Kevin Roberts, talking about this being bigger than anything that they've ever done before. Paul Danz, their director of Project 2025, had told reporters that in what makes this different is that, quote, never before has the entire movement banded together to construct a comprehensive plan to deconstruct the out-of-touch and weaponized administrative state, end quote. So there's the Heritage Foundation in this. Who are some of the other players that stick out to you as groups or movements that you think people need to be paying attention to?
Now, remember, I said there were over 80 right now. And there were people joining as we were writing this analysis. One of the main ones that I would be concerned about, or that I am concerned about, is the Alliance Defending Freedom. They have enormous power. Let me back up just a minute. I wanted to emphasize something you said about this movement being well-funded. It is completely funded, which is almost never happens in policy advocacy, civil society situations. This level of advocacy on the right, their resources outweigh or outshine but more progressive policies or more progressive organizations. I don't even know to what degree. It is astonishing. And of course, we don't know where that money comes from. We have some idea. There's 4 or 5 billionaires who put up a lot of the money, but because almost all of it is done through different organizations or donor advised funds, we don't know. But what we do know is that the Alliance Defending Freedom several years ago had a budget of $5 million, and most of their lawyers were volunteer, working with firms and volunteering. Now they've got more than 200 staff and $60 million budget. And that's just what is reported. They also have an entire international arm that is doing the same thing in other countries in Europe, mostly, that they're doing in the United States. They are the organization that is behind the Dobbs decision overturning Roe, behind the abortion drug
Mifepristone.
Yeah, the FDA thing, they are behind the wedding cake case, the wedding website case that just came. Basically, what the Supreme Court did was said it's okay to discriminate if your faith tells you that you must. They have been to the Supreme Court, I think, more times than any other civil society organization and have won almost every time. We're talking about 13 or 14 times. And every one of those times, a community's rights, women, LGBTQ people, people of other faiths, you know, they've lost something. They've lost a bit of their American rights. They don't get nearly enough attention. We need to do more about exposing who they are, why they do it, how long they've been there. Our new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was a lawyer for them. He was early on one of the staff people. They have something called the Blackstone Fellowship, where Senator Josh Hawley was one of those. Amy Coney Barrett, our Supreme Court Justice, was one of it. So you can see how well connected they are. It's interesting because they were actually not going to get on board with Trump's campaign in 2016. But reportedly, time went on. He became clearer that, you know, he was going to be the nominee. They agreed to get on board basically because Trump told everybody he'd give them the judges that they wanted. And that's exactly what has happened. In just 6 years, we're already seeing the effects of that and the effects on people's human and civil rights. So that's the one group that jumps out at me. And they're also rabidly anti-LGBTQ. You know, in my opinion, they're also anti-woman. It is my view that their work to stop abortion will evolve into making contraceptive difficult to find or get difficult to get. There's already a network that will prevent no-fault divorce. So you see the path we're going on. Yes, it's starting with LGBTQ people and abortion, like it always does, but there's always a bigger picture. And so Alliance Defending Freedom is somebody I'd be worried about. Another one that first comes to mind is the Family Research Council. They've been around for years and years and years, originally out of Louisiana, run by a man named Tony Perkins. They have recently gone from a non-profit sort of civil society organization to being designated as a church. They also are rapidly anti-LGBTQ, even more vocally and offensively than some of the others.
I appreciate you walking through the huge role that ADF has played in shaping American politics, from the Supreme Court to what is it, the second in line for presidency now, Mike Johnson. You know how significant that is in how determined a force they are to really take people all the way back. Women back in the kitchen, you know, and barefoot and pregnant, and basic rights taken away from whole sections of people, LGBTQ community erased from public society. You know, this is what they're going for. They have made a lot of wins and inroads. So I really appreciate you getting into that. Looking through the partners, you look at Turning Points USA is part of it. You look at Moms for Liberty is in there. The Conservative Partnership Institute.
Don't forget
It's,
Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly's.
oh, it really is a wide grouping that really has united around this. Even if you have the Trump campaign saying that their only plan that speaks for them is Agenda 47, well, take a look at Agenda 47 and take a look at Project 2025. And if you don't see a match, I don't know, get your eyes shut, because a lot of those things are right in line with Project 2025. If you listen to what Trump has said recently, he is advocating and articulating very clearly messaging that is outlined in Project 2025. There's great unity in that. For example, his Veterans Day speech, the quote, "We will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country. The threat from outside forces is far less sinister, dangerous, and grave than the threat from within. Our threat is from within," end quote. Fascism's designation of all competing parties, any opposition, as the enemy is like just classic. This idea of dehumanizing and demonizing to justify the elimination of all opposition to the authoritarian leader is classic. His quips about expanding the death penalty, the talking about those who aren't loyal to him. He's very open, and so are those who speak for him. The other thing that he said, I guess it was earlier this fall, he talked about non-white immigrants, quote unquote, poisoning the blood of our country. Pulled directly from Mein Kampf. These are not hyperbole. These are just things he said recently. So Trump's top domestic policy advisor, Stephen Miller, he told the New York Times recently in their report about his plans that, quote, they're planning an extreme expansion of his first crackdown on immigration if he returns to power in 2025, including preparing to round up undocumented people already in the United States on a vast scale and detain them in sprawling camps while they wait to be expelled. The plans would sharply restrict both legal and illegal immigration in a multitude of ways, end quote. And then he went on to talk about speeding up mass deportation, not having due process hearings, building, quote unquote, huge camps to detain people while they wait deportation. Basically, quote, unleashing the vast arsenal of federal powers to implement the most spectacular migration crackdown, end quote.
Yeah.
It's just startling to me how their language is extremely consistent with what they are trying to distance themselves with. Their plan and what they're advocating and saying for is completely in line with Project 2025. So I just wanted to get any of your thoughts that you have on that.
Well, I mean, I think that the idea of distancing themselves, speculation, but it probably has more to do with the fact that Trump wants to be the one to take credit for it, as opposed to being out there that somebody is telling him what to do or making recommendations, that he doesn't already know all these things. That's my opinion of it. If he is elected, he will try to do these things. Now, whether or not that court that he sort of handpicked or allowed these same advisors to pick for him goes along with it, we'll see. They certainly will on some issues. They won't on others. But a lot of the stuff that he wants to do, or that this Project 2025 wants to do, the powers will be invested in the presidency and into the executive branch. There will be very little recourse. One thing I do want to make clear, something that we think is a very important point, is that this is being written. They themselves are saying this is the farthest we've ever gone. This is the most ambitious, you know, we have, and it's for the next conservative president. That's how they define it. Even if Trump doesn't win, this is still in writing. I mean, this is the plan. This is the far right, the extreme far right, the Christian nationalist plan. Yes, it would be easier if the president was on board with it, but this isn't dependent upon the presidency. This plan is in place. It's already moving forward. So I just want to point out that it's also about the narrative, the story that's being told about the United States and its, in their view, decline and how it can be resurrected. And I say resurrected purposely for the Christian reference. It isn't Make America Great Again. It's bigger than that, this movement.
I really appreciate that last part. I think that that's extremely important that people grasp. We're having this conversation in November, and soon we will be up against the third anniversary of the January 6th coup, the leaders of which still have not been held to account. And Trump continues to be the front runner, embraced and backed by now a thoroughly fascist GOP. Trump and his party are literally, as my friend Paul Street recently wrote on his Substack, quote, screaming it off the rooftops ever since. They are a fascist menace to what's left of U.S. democracy. And now they may well come to power in 2025 with a fully worked up plan for Christian white nationalist takeover of the U.S. state, end quote. That is, as you were mentioning about the media, not covered at all in terms of the stakes, what it means to have mapped out plans to use the power of the federal government to penalize opposition critics, to purge any loyalists that in some way held him back the first go, him being Trump, the level of planning to deploy the military against domestic protests, that would shred whatever fabric of democratic governance that this country likes to say that it has. I really think that that grasping of the gravity is just not there. Let's not forget what he did do and did accomplish. And I'm not saying that in a positive way in case anyone's confused. Let's not forget that he had talked about terminating the Constitution in December 2022 so that he could go back to power, or his putting kids in cages and mass detention and deportation. We shouldn't forget all of his talk over and over again about putting his opponents in jail, targeting the media so viciously, how he had a list of basically targets that included people like head of the FBI or his opponent at that time, Hillary Clinton. He has experience testing the limits of presidential power. He tried to ban Muslims. He built the border wall. He did these things, but he met setbacks. I feel like there's been this reevaluation period of, okay, we couldn't consolidate before. How can we do this differently so that it's not about gaining another 4 years and then a transfer of power, but so that they're in and power is forever transformed, so that their opposition never holds power again and that they become an unquestionable power? And so I just wanted to dig more into what this danger is. And in your report, you identify 13 kind of key elements: the role of Christian nationalism, gutting the civil service, ending racial equity efforts, eviscerating LGBTQ plus rights and equality, restricting sexual and reproductive health and rights, immigration policies, climate change efforts, ending quote-unquote woke military policies, quote-unquote reforming public education, restricting human rights and existing international bodies. I want you to take it wherever you want to take it in terms of, what does this mean? What are the implications here? Why is this so dangerous?
I want to go back just for 1 second and add to what you were saying, in that people are not grasping the gravity. People continue to fool themselves. Even the smartest, brightest, most experienced, sophisticated, whatever, even common sense people, they continue to tell themselves that X, Y, and Z can't happen again. Trump can't get elected again. There won't be another insurrection at the Capitol. There won't be another Charlottesville. There won't be another George Floyd. You know, that all of these things are not going to happen, or they can't happen, I should say. We saw the dangers of it, and nobody's going to let that happen again. Well, that's just false. I mean, I certainly hope it doesn't happen. Nobody wants that. But the idea that it can't happen, that's how we got Trump to begin with, right? Is that, you know, it just couldn't happen. It didn't make any sense. It was just a ridiculous thought that this man could be president of the United States. 2 years ago, it would have been a ridiculous thought that he would get up in front of thousands of people and call his political enemies vermin and say straight up that he's going after them, that he's going to take control of the DOJ and the FBI and he's going after them. This is what I would encourage people to take in. I don't want people to be afraid. I want them to work. I want them to be informed. Do not put your head in the sand. The only reason that this is being written, this Project 2025, to this degree, is because there is a general feeling that it could very well come to pass. Now, if it does come to pass, the people who are in civil servant positions, who have workplace protections just like any other employee, are going to have those protections stripped away from them so that they can be fired at will as if they're an appointed person. We're talking about people who have been working for 30 years. Now, as a citizen, do you want an experienced person or do you want somebody who has an agenda? And then they ask you to believe that of the tens of thousands of federal employees, the vast majority of them have bought into this woke agenda and are deliberately thwarting these religious-based conservative principles that are really how it's supposed to be. As opposed to, these are tens of thousands of people who have worked for decades in their particular field, and they're just doing their job. So much of this is based on conspiracy theories. It's based on irrational thinking that our civil servants are actually banded together to push an agenda as opposed to their work being driven by the legislation, by the laws, by the court decisions. Another thing is this thing about education. The idea that all educators have banded together to encourage young children to question their identity, to question what it means to be white or black or Asian or Latino, you know, to inject these racial elements instead of teaching about them. And so they want to take all thought out of teaching. Additionally, they want to make sure that taxpayer dollars go for religious schools. And of course, in this case, it means Christian-based schools, where the appropriate lessons will be taught, where children will grow up and will marry and have 2.5 children and go to church every Sunday. Preferably, they'll be white. If you can shift the narrative just enough and shift the dollars enough, then you're going to achieve it. And it's like you said, once you get to a certain point, there's no going back, or at least generations before you go back.
It made me think when you're talking about how do you get people to accept something so drastic and outside anything that we've seen before, and how you need to obliterate truth and reason to do that. When I look at it and I think about the thread here that connects these different parts of Project 2025, whether it is in terms of climate change or immigration or LGBTQ or the different specific aspects that are targeted, there's this theme of the radical reconception of the scope and size and role of the government. This is something that is, I think, very much in the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism's report, how the executive branch is elevated, as we saw already in Trump's first, but this is a whole new level into creating what would be Trump's personal fiefdom and imposing on all of society the most vicious xenophobia, the most vicious patriarchy, white supremacy, the overt forcing of quote-unquote traditional values, which really is biblical literalism of the Christian theocratic variety, on all of society. And that being what shapes public policy and law, which in doing so would strip these protections of people of color, women, immigrants, LGBTQ people, probably in the direction they're going, the rights of children to learn, in my opinion, what childhood is, stripping all that and stripping away the agencies that in whatever way currently act as a recourse to defend those rights or to monitor something like the environment protection, and really dismantling the federal government's ability to do any of those protections or provide any services. You had talked about earlier, making sure that everybody in power is an absolute loyalist. You're talking about people that have been doing their job for decades and decades. Regardless of who's president, it has nothing to do with that. Now, suddenly, that would be no more. And anything that would track or monitor, as I said, would be shut down. Just think of what it would mean if they had been able to do that during COVID, where people weren't able, even with all the repression of science and the anti-vax lunacy and all that we did witness, if there hadn't been a CDC at that point that was an independent institution, just think of what that would mean. Those are some of the things that this brings up to me.
Well, yeah. Now, I think the society is built on a set of checks and balances, just like our government is. The idea of dismantling the government or infusing all the power into the executive branch is the same thing as upending society, because people begin to have a different outlook. What does it mean? These ideas of open dissent. Then the society begins to shape. Like, what are we talking about here, Sam? It's like, we're talking about the 1950s and before. That's where we had segregation.
Oh, I think that they want to go back further. I think that they actually want to go back further. And I think that they want to go to a place that we actually haven't seen before. Because while they're going back further on one hand, on the other hand, They have a whole surveillance state that didn't exist before. And they have nuclear weapons that didn't exist before. So it's like going back and with more power than the state has ever had before.
You're absolutely right. Forget 2025. We have lots of work to do to bring equity to this country. Don't get me wrong. There are plans. There are blueprints. There are model legislation. The same groups that are supporting this 2025, they have vast networks in all the states to get this legislation passed. It is about the power, but the one thing that's missing, I'm not a lawyer, I'm certainly not a constitutional lawyer, but there was more attention paid to the separation of church and state. Now it's become something that is to be debated, as opposed to a foundational principle of our country. The very clear and increasingly open acknowledgement of their desire to infuse Christianity into our government, into our schools, into our daily lives. It's becoming that much more open and evident. And how do you get people to get on board? You find the thing that they're afraid of. You make it personal. You say your 8-year-old child's teacher is mandated, you know, to read some book and explain gender identity and orientation. The thing about this extreme far right is that they never, ever take their eye off the ball. They are willing to invest for decades. That's how long they've been doing this. I mean, it started like in the 60s. As soon as the birth control pills and desegregation and civil rights movement, there was an immediate pushback, but there was not the power. Now, over the years, the power has been reattained, and now the opportunity to increase it and become authoritarian, even though that's what they would never say. And that's what feels new, because it's going to be done with Christianity as a part of it. I respect all people of faith. The difference here is that these guys want to tell people what to believe, how to believe it, how to act on it. And they want to make sure that the government is on board with that, which is an entirely different thing than people's rights to religious freedom.
I think that this was really important, and we're going to need to keep talking about this. This is a conversation that isn't a one-off. This is something that is going to need to continue. I guess one thing before we close and I let you talk about where people can find out more and connect with you and your work. How do you see in this moment, there's the work that you all have done in writing this report to sound this alarm, to make sure that people know about this danger. For people listening, you know, I know that you've done work on how we are better storytellers of the danger that we face. And I guess without a culture of quote unquote fear mongering or something like that, what do you hope that those of us who are listening to this conversation, you know, where do we go from here in terms of helping others understand this threat?
Obviously, that's a good question. It's also a difficult thing. One of the challenges that we face as a society, as communities, is being able to talk about some of these issues without it devolving into anger or rejection. It can be tough, depending on where you live. Like, maybe it's not as tough in some areas, but like where I live, the idea that I saw somebody today who actually knew what Project 2025 was amazing. Here in Alabama, I think that people need to be sensitive and not accusatory. If they're trying to explain why they believe that this shift to authoritarianism is a danger, and why it's not necessarily about a, you know, one candidate or another or one policy over another, it's the big picture. I think that is where people should start. Educate yourselves. And that means don't just read what your social media feeds you. Go seek out other points of view. If you're on social media, you're only getting what they think you want or what they want you to get. Don't be afraid to engage in genuine and respectful conversation about these issues. Because one of the things is that there is a polarization that's kind of settled over our society. And we're only going to get past that if people can find a way to discuss these matters. Having said that, then you also have to draw a line, right? Because there is no acceptable situation where Black people are discriminated against. There is no acceptable situation where LGBTQ people are not affirmed. It's hard because that's what the right has done to us. They're good at what they do. And they've brought it down to a couple of issues that people find it very hard to discuss, especially those who were brought up saying, don't ever discuss politics and money and public, you know, all that. We're in a different world where people have to be willing to say what they think, but they also have to be willing to do it in a way that can be heard. But then there's me that will scream it from the rooftops. So I don't know. Maybe we just need all of it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, to share your insight and perspective and the work that you are doing. We're going to put a link in the show notes to the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism's Project 2025, the Far Right Playbook for American Authoritarianism report, so that folks can read it and share it. If people want to learn more, get in contact with you, follow your work, or be part of what you're doing, where should they go? What should they do?
They should please go to our website, which is globalextremism.org. On our website, we have lots of resources, reports we've written on these and ancillary issues around Project 2025. We would love for people to go and read them. And you can contact us. We have a contact form. We're on Twitter at Global Extremism, and I'm on Twitter at Wendy Vah.
Thank you so much, Wendy. It was a real pleasure. If we have to talk about these really troubling things, part of what we need to do is build a network of people who are engaging with this with substance as part of struggling against it. So if we have to fight this, I'm glad to be fighting it with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Refuse Fascism. Got thoughts or questions off this episode? We want to hear them. Ideas for topics or guests? Yes, please send them to us. In fact, today's guest was only possible because of a listener just like you. Have a skill you think you could help? We want to know all about it. Reach me at Twitter at Sam B. Goldman. Yes, I'm still there. But you don't have to be there. You can drop me a line at SamanthaGoldman@RefuseFascism.org. You can connect with Refuse Fascism on Instagram, Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky, all at Refuse Fascism. You can also connect with me on TikTok. I have that now. And my handle is at SamGoldmanRF. So I'll be posting more stuff there. Or you can leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. There's a button in the show notes. Click it and let us know what you're thinking. If you want to support the show, it's so simple. The best thing you can do is rate and review on Apple Podcasts or your listening platform of choice. And of course, follow, subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you did that or do that already, become a patron to support our pod and content creation to help people understand and act to stop the fascist threat. If you are a patron or become one after listening to today's episode, you will be invited to join Coco Das, Paul Street, and myself Wednesday, November 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for a virtual Q&A over on Zoom. If you sign up before November 29th at 8 p.m., you'll get an invite, and we just really look forward to talking with you. So if you are not signed up yet, give today at patreon.com/refusefascism or head on over to refusefascism.org, hit the donate button, sign up for $5 a month or more, and you'll get that invite. We really, truly could not do the show without you and can't wait to talk with y'all on November 29th. Thanks to Richie Marini, Lena Thorne, and Mark Tinkelman for helping produce this episode. Thanks to incredible volunteers. We have transcripts available for each show, so be sure to visit refusefascism.org. Sign up to get them in your inbox. We'll be off next Sunday, but look forward to seeing all our patrons and sustainers Wednesday, November 29th, over on Zoom. We'll be back with our regular episode December 3rd. And until then, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.